Hi there, and welcome to another edition of the Romance Program. I'm Volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sun Sounds. I've got one story coming up this hour. It's from True Confessions magazine called I Need Two Lovers a Day. Here's the story. When I awoke that day, the early morning sky had tinges of rose that seemed to rest on the treetops. It was a beautiful sight to behold, almost as beautiful as my Steve. When I slipped out of bed, Steve was still asleep. I stopped by Janelle's room, and I was pleased to see that she was still sleeping too. In the kitchen, I put on the coffee and stepped outside to enjoy the sunrise. This had always been my favorite time of day. I loved those precious moments when the world around me wasn't quite awake. The sunlight was just starting to sparkle on the dew, turning my backyard into a dazzling green carpet. Overhead, a cool breeze flattered the oak leaves and dappled the ground with shadows. The fragrance of honeysuckle was heavy in the air. It was a wonderful day to be alive. During breakfast that morning, Steve and Janelle decided that we would spend the day at the lake. It was still a little cool to swim, but we could have a picnic and just share some family time. I had suggested going to the afternoon showing of a new film at our local movie house, but they outvoted me. Looking back, I'm really glad they did. It was a gorgeous late spring day. Janelle and I made a sandcastle while Steve prepared the grill for our hamburger lunch. We'd always been close, often sharing our thoughts and feelings. I loved the relationship I had with my daughter and eagerly looked forward to her teen years. At six, Janelle was always questioning things. That day, her questions seemed a little morose, but I didn't notice, except in hindsight. If I thought anything at all about it at the time, I was probably glad that Janelle had begun to recognize that life had an ending as well as a beginning. We were building the moat around our castle when Janelle told me, Janine's puppy died Thursday night. I looked at her, trying to gauge what her reaction to the death was, a reaction to the death of the animal. I knew she had a reason for telling me, so I kept my voice neutral. Oh? Janelle shook her head sadly. Poor Jasmine is so sad. It's okay if she feels sad. It hurts when someone you love dies. I'd be real, real sad if Bootsy died. I smiled. That was what she was worried about, her beloved kitten. I would be too, but you know what? Bootsy is healthy and young, and I think she'll probably be with us for a long time. Janelle turned big, trusting eyes toward me and asked, Really? Really? I assured her. It was late afternoon when we started home, and we were all tired but relaxed and just enjoying each other's company. Steve and I had been married 10 years, and we were still very much in love. He was the husband I'd always dreamed of, and he was a wonderful father. Together, we were living the American dream. We weren't rich, but we got by just fine and even had a little saved for emergencies. Our weekends were almost always spent together, and neither of us felt much of a need for other people in our lives. We were the perfect family. That night, I washed Janelle's hair and sat with her while she bathed. It was a ritual we'd been sharing since her toddler days. Mama, does it hurt when you die? I really don't know, sweetheart. But do you think it does? I sighed. How was I supposed to answer this one? I'm not sure. I think that sometimes when someone gets sick or injured, it might hurt. But I don't think dying hurts. Dying is sort of like a passage to transformation. You're not really gone, you're just changed, transformed. Janelle's nose wrinkled in concentration. Transformed? Yes, transformed. Your spirit, the part of you that is really you, that part doesn't die, it lives forever. Janelle's eyes were wide and a smile split her face. Yes, in heaven, your spirit gets to be an angel. I knew that. I smiled, relieved that she didn't seem troubled anymore. I knew it was an impossible dream, but I really wanted to shield her from the horrors of real life. Steve and I read her a story and kissed her goodnight. Later, we made love and fell asleep locked in each other's arms. The next day was Sunday, and I awoke as the sky was showing the slightest bit of morning color to the east. Soon the sun melted the late frost. It was going to be another gorgeous day. Unfortunately, I had promised my best friend, Joellen, that I'd help out at her restaurant for a few hours during the lunch rush. Steve and Janelle were in the backyard when I was ready to leave, and I walked out there to tell them goodbye. Steve was sharpening the blade on the lawnmower. I've got to go, guys, I said, with my hand resting on Steve's shoulder. Janelle looked pained and rushed over to hug me. Do you have to go, Mama? Yes, sweetheart. I promised Joellen I'd help this afternoon. I don't want you to go, she whined, which was so unlike her. Jan, I have to. I can't break a promise. You and Daddy will have a nice time. Steve and I shared a look, both of us puzzled by her behavior. I wondered if she was coming down with something. Steve told Janelle, when we get through, we can go out for pizza, okay? A tiny smile touched her lips. She loved pizza more than anything. She nodded and turned her eyes to me. There was something I couldn't define there. She didn't seem to have a fever. Stooping down in front of her, I took her small hands in mine. I won't be gone long, I said softly. I promise. She nodded and threw her arms around my neck. I love you, Mama. I love you too, Angel, I replied. After giving her a tight hug, I pecked Steve on the cheek and moved to leave. As I was rounding the corner of the house, I heard Steve ask Janelle if she wanted to go to the park after the pizza parlor, and she squealed in delight. I smiled, certain that whatever had been bothering her was now resolved. The lunch crowd had thinned out, and Joellen and I were sipping coffee when the young waitress called me to the phone. I don't remember the drive to the hospital. I barely remember talking to the doctor. I felt like I was walking in a thick fog. A nightmare place where sorrow and terror reigned. It was only later that I allowed myself to think about what had happened to my baby. I guess Steve told me that afternoon, but I couldn't hear it then, and I didn't care. All I cared about was Janelle. All I could think about was her recovery. As Steve had promised, he and Janelle walked to the park after sharing a pizza. A few of Janelle's classmates were there, and Steve sat talking to Holly's father while the kids practiced throwing and catching a softball for the upcoming summer season. All the girls were on the same team, and Janelle was excited about it. While Steve and Nick talked, the girls had moved to the other side of the park. The screams of children were what alerted the men that something was wrong. Steve saw the car cutting a deadly path across the grassy area where the girls were. He ran as fast as he could, but then there was nothing he could do. He was too helpless to stop it. He told me later that Janelle just stood there like a deer frozen in a strong beam of headlights. The terrible, tormenting thing was that it wasn't even the driver's fault. Mr. Haltson, I was later told, had a fatal heart attack. He was probably dead when his car struck Janelle. There was no one to blame, no way to seek justice. My daughter lay critically injured, and I had no place to direct my pain, grief, and anger. It was an appalling 3 days as I sat there and watched my baby die. The funeral was an experience in terror. The day dawned dreary and overcast. When we left the cemetery, I saw the dark clouds beginning to build. I couldn't look at the tiny coffin. I concentrated my attention on the dark green pine trees edging the hillside. An eternity later, our family and friends were gone, and Steve and I were still standing beside Janelle's grave. The awful moment was at hand. The very idea of leaving her there in that cold, dark grave. When we got home, Steve and I just sat there. We didn't eat, didn't sleep, didn't talk. What was there to say? Our daughter was dead. Nothing else seemed to matter. I let him hold me for a while, but then pulled away and wandered out into the patio. The next few months, we not only severed ties with our family and friends, but with each other. I was lost in my grief. I couldn't work. I could even think, I couldn't work. I couldn't even think straight. The more Steve pushed me to resume my former life, the more I pulled away. I was lost in a world of if only I hadn't gone to the restaurant that day. If only I'd listened to Janelle that morning when she begged me not to leave her. Had she known? Had she somehow known she'd never see me again? I tormented myself, and then my grief hardened into anger. This was the point when I needed someone to blame, and I blamed Steve. After all, he'd been with her that day. It seemed to me that he didn't feel the least bit guilty. He worked, he spent time with his friends, and he carried on as if nothing out of the ordinary had happened. All the family time we used to share was a thing of the past. Steve started to spend his spare time with Kyle, his friend and partner at the car dealership they co-owned. I didn't care. It was too hard for me to be around him anyway. He might as well have killed Janelle himself, as far as I was concerned. We didn't grieve together, if, in fact, he grieved at all. I felt utterly and completely alone. It was September when everything came to a head. The leaves were turning brown, and they rattled on their limbs as I inched down the sidewalk toward town. I was standing at the corner of Jefferson Street and 4th Avenue when I saw them. At first, I was shocked, numb. I blinked several times as if I thought what I saw might be a vision problem, but it wasn't. I knew Steve's car, and I easily recognized him behind the wheel. What I couldn't quite comprehend was the woman that was practically sitting in his lap. When the ability to move returned, I turned my head, hoping he wouldn't see me. Somehow I started back home. I didn't know what to do. Hadn't Steve hurt me enough already? I could not believe he had done that to me. Why could he take a lover when our daughter was dead? I numbly walked back home. We weren't going to survive the death of Janelle. The love that I'd been certain of would last, that I'd been certain would last a lifetime, had shattered into a million irreparable pieces. It was over. I packed his bags as soon as I got home and then sat down in the big chair. I felt relatively calm. I realized that I wasn't really hurt by Steve's affair. Oh, sure, my ego was wounded, my pride was injured. But as far as a deep searing ache in the center of my heart, I didn't have one. I just didn't care anymore about us. I fell into a peculiar half-sleep state. The nights had become warm fantasies of terror. I wasn't there when it happened, but my mind created its own version of the truth. Night after night, I saw my baby struck by that car. Sleep was getting harder and harder. A noise penetrated my slumber, and my mind swam lazily in the ebbing tide of sleep. A louder sound brought me awake, and I realized it was Steve finally arriving home. A quick look at the clock told me it was well after 9. When he entered the room, he opened his mouth as if to speak, but before he did, his eyes fell on the bag standing by the front door. "What's going on? Are you going somewhere?" His tone was curious. Dragging myself from the chair, I faced him. "No," I said calmly, "you are." Steve's dark eye narrowed. "Oh yeah, where am I going?" I shrugged, letting him know that where he went was no concern of mine. "Wherever you like." Moving cautiously toward me, Steve reached his hand up to my face, but I jerked away. The thought of him touching me was so repugnant I couldn't even pretend anymore. "Tell me what this is all about. I walked into town this afternoon." Steve looked at me as if what I had just said was completely irrelevant to the issue at hand. "Good," he said slowly, as he fixed himself a drink. He'd been doing that a lot lately. "It's about time you made an effort to get back on the track." Anger swelled inside of me at his attempt to divert the conversation. "I saw you." He turned then, his face pale, but he was trying to hold it together and appear curiously surprised. "Did you?" I could not believe how he was behaving. The very least he owed me was the truth, and it made me wonder just how many times he'd lied to me in the past. Disgusted, I roared at him. "Stop it, Steve. Stop lying to me. I saw you. I saw you with her, that woman." "I don't know what to say to you, Christina. Since Jan died, you've been so wrapped up in yourself, in your own pain, that you just pushed me away. Every day you slipped further and further away from me. I didn't know how to bring you back." He was sobbing, but I wasn't moved. "You're a stupid man, Steve. Surely you realize that having an affair wasn't going to win you any awards with me," I snapped. "I didn't mean for it to happen, Chrissy. It's just I was hurting too. I needed someone, but you would hardly talk to me." I glared at him angrily. "Let me see if I understand this. Are you saying that it's my fault you had an affair?" "That's not what I meant." I sighed and turned away. "It doesn't even matter, Steve. I want a divorce. That's all I know right now." I didn't hear him approach, but suddenly he clamped his hand around my arm and whirled me around. "You don't mean that. Surely you don't mean that." I met his gaze head on. "Yes, I certainly do mean it." Steve looked at me, really looked at me. "You hate me, don't you, Christina?" I didn't reply. "You do. I see it in your eyes. You blame me for Janelle's death, and you hate me." I didn't deny his charges. He laughed mirthlessly and then moved toward the front door. "You know what? I blame myself, too. You can never hate me more than I hate myself. I loved her, too, Christina. I really did, and somewhere inside of you, you know it, too." I didn't reply. What did it matter? Our daughter was dead. We were both left with nothing but a ghost to love and memories to haunt us. I heard the gentle closing of the door as he left, and then I was alone. The next few days were bizarre. I returned to work, though it was harder than I had expected when friends and coworkers didn't know what to say to me. Christmas was horrible, but somehow I got through it. I thought I was doing pretty good. I asked for a transfer. The company I worked for had several divisions nationwide. Transfers weren't uncommon, and they were more than willing to find a place for me. I was suddenly anxious to leave my hometown behind. But leaving town seemed to be a positive step in the right direction. The only division that had an opening was in Louisiana. It was a long way from Virginia. It was a gorgeous day in February, just a week after Valentine's Day. I left early. I was excited about what lay ahead. I had two weeks to rent a place to stay and get settled in before my new job started. I found the perfect house, a quaint, charming little neighborhood. Getting settled and finding my way around town occupied the first few days. And I struck up a friendship with my landlady, Ellen, right away. Ellen owned my townhouse as well as the one to my right where she lived. She was closer to 60. She told me evasively she'd been a widow for 15 years and had 3 daughters and 2 sons and 10 grandchildren. 3 of them lived in other states, and 1 lived 30 miles south of town. Her oldest daughter lived nearby, but I got the distinct impression that she rarely visited her mother. Ellen was lonely, and maybe I was too. We became good friends. Ellen took me with her to her weekly Thursday night bingo. I've never seen so much gray hair in one room, and some normally sweet little old women can become downright vicious over their bingo. She introduced me to the treasures that could be found at Saturday morning yard sales and flea markets. She made my transition easier than I could have hoped. Janelle still weighed heavily on my mind, but I was settling in nicely. Steve never crossed my mind in those early days. I had no idea what he'd been doing since our divorce. I liked my new job right away. I held the same position I had in Virginia. The pay was the same as back home. As everyone had told me it would, the aching, empty hole in my heart slowly started to heal. By midsummer, I could think of Janelle without crying. The only rough period those first few months was the anniversary of Janelle's death. I'd visited her grave before I left to tell her goodbye, but it didn't feel right that I was too far away to visit that day and take flowers to her grave. The day fell on a Monday, so at least I had work to occupy my mind. I hadn't told Ellen the significance of the day. I spent most of the evening looking through photo albums. That night was the first time I thought about Steve in months. My anger receded. We had been in love with each other and our child. Without actually realizing what I was doing, I picked up the phone and called information to get Steve's new number. He answered on the second ring, and his voice sounded so familiar, so warm that I was speechless. With the sweeping emotions coursing through me, I rasped his name before he hung up. "Christina, is that you?" "Yes," I whispered, feeling tears. He was thinking of Janelle, too. I could hear it in his voice. "I'm so glad you called. I've been worried about you all day. I don't know how to reach you," or "I didn't know. I was thinking a lot about you too, Steve. I just got back from the cemetery. I didn't figure you'd be able to get there." A sob caught in my throat. "Thank you, Steve. That's what I was calling about." No problem. We talked for a few more minutes, and I gave him my new number. We agreed to keep in touch, and we shared some special memories. I felt better by the time we hung up. Later that summer, Ellen and I were in our favorite hideaway in her courtyard. We didn't hear the car that brought Ellen's visitor. Both of us were startled when we heard the loud squeak of the gate. "Mom?" a decidedly male voice called out. "Are you back here?" Ellen squealed and jumped up. "Martin!" "That's my youngest son. He's divorced, you know." I smiled and nodded. She told me a million times that Martin had finally come to his senses and divorced that two-bit hussy he'd married. Martin was just as handsome and personable as Ellen had said. I tried to excuse myself so she could have some time with her son, but she would have none of it. Martin and I were ushered inside and fed homemade apple pie with vanilla ice cream. Shortly before 9, I stood up, firmly telling Ellen that I had to go. She'd thwarted 2 earlier attempts. Ellen didn't protest, but before I could escape, she said, "Martin, dear, walk Christina home. It's not safe for a woman out alone at night." I turned around. "Ellen, I live next door." Martin chuckled as he followed me toward the door. "It's all right, Christina. I'm beginning to realize it's pointless to argue with Mom." Looking past him, I called out to Ellen, "Good night, and thanks for the dessert. It was delicious." Ellen beamed with pleasure. "Thank you, dear. I'll see you tomorrow." Out on the front walk, Martin apologized for his mother's actions. "Don't worry about it. She means well." Martin took the key from my hand and fiddled with the lock. "She thinks a lot of you." I blinked in surprise. I knew she did, but I couldn't believe she'd be telling him about me. "She said that?" "Oh, yeah. Bet I know more about you than any other stranger you've ever met." I flushed, wondering what Ellen had told this man. "You're no stranger. I do believe you're your mother's favorite, though you probably shouldn't tell your siblings." Martin opened the door and turned toward me. "So Mom's been boring you with the details of my unsavory marriage?" I couldn't help laughing. His mother wasn't one to keep her opinions to herself. "Well, I wouldn't exactly call her accounts boring. Martin laughed uproariously. I couldn't help noticing his nice smile. He was a good-looking man, but didn't seem to be snobbish about it. "She's a wonderful woman," I said. I wanted to invite him in, but I wasn't sure what he'd think if I asked. "Would you like to come in for a minute?" Martin smiled. "I guess I'd better. Mother will be disappointed if I return right away." I nodded and led the way into the living room. "I like what you've done with the place," Martin said. I was startled by the remark. "Thanks," I said, "but I haven't done a thing. Ellen said the last tenants did a lot of work on the house." "The Whiteheads, yes," Martin said. I offered him a drink and we talked for almost an hour. It was the first man I'd been attracted to since Steve. We hadn't discussed anything terribly personal. Mostly he told me about the town where he was a police officer and how rapidly the crime rate was climbing now that there were rumors of gang activity. I was horrified. He stood up after draining the bottle of beer I gave him and said he'd better get back to his mom's. I've really enjoyed this evening. Would it be all right if I call you sometime?" I was surprised but pleased. "I'd like that." He did call 2 days later. That weekend he took me to the town where he lived. Driving down the main street, it was hard to believe gangs ran loose, wreaking havoc and terrorizing citizens. Some friends dropped by who had a daughter a year older than Janelle had been when she died, and she looked like Janelle too. Martin seemed to sense my discomfort because he politely told his unexpected guests that we were about to leave. Martin's expression when he turned from the door told me he knew exactly what had just occurred. I fidgeted as he walked toward me, sitting down beside me. "I'm really sorry about that," he said. I could feel my eyes fill with tears as I turned them toward his kind, dark ones. "I'm sorry I was rude to your friends." Silently, Martin pulled me into his arms. "It's all right, Christina." "Ellen told you, didn't she?" I murmured against his strong shoulder. "Yes, I'm so very sorry. I can't imagine how you must feel." A sob caught in my throat. "No one can," I rasped. Then Martin just held me while I cried. Martin made love to me that afternoon in ways I'd never even imagined. I stayed at Martin's that night, and though we shared ourselves unselfishly, I realized by morning that I didn't want a relationship with him. I thought he'd make a wonderful friend. I felt way too vulnerable to risk my heart. I just tried to brush off Martin, but he'd have none of it. In the end, he forced me to explain my behavior, and when I did, he seemed to understand completely. My 33rd birthday came one Saturday in September. Ellen arrived early with a breakfast tray, and afterward, we spent the morning shopping. We returned around noon, and Martin was there. In our absence, he decorated the courtyard with streamers and balloons. He bought a cake and several bottles of champagne. Some time later, Ellen excused herself, insisting she felt a little faint from the two glasses of champagne she'd consumed. Martin and I watched her leave, but we didn't move. I felt content and maybe a little lazy. The scent of roses hung heavy in the air. "I hope it's been a good birthday for you, Chrissy," Martin said. I turned to him and smiled. "It's been wonderful. I don't know what I'd do without you and Ellen." "Oh, I think you'd do just fine. Well, I just hope I never have to find out." Martin took my hand and squeezed it gently. "If it's up to me, you won't." His tone was soft and promising. I saw something there that astounded me. Martin loved me, and in my fuzzy, slightly intoxicated state, I thought maybe I loved him too. When he stood and offered me his hand, I took it and allowed him to lead me next door to my house. Our lovemaking seemed almost spiritual. Completely sober now and just a little befuddled by my earlier actions, I intended to escape as soon as possible. I hadn't counted on Ellen preparing dinner for the three of us. By the time we sat down at the backyard picnic table, the leaves of the nearby trees stood out against the transparent sky. Beyond the trees, the fire of the sunset appeared like a vision. The heat continued long after sundown, but there was no breeze, no rain. Lightning flickered, and in the bushes on the back side of the courtyard, mosquitoes hummed and buzzed. "I'm sorry," Martin said when his mother disappeared to get the rest of the cake. I looked over at him guiltily. "For what?" "For ruining your birthday." I forced a smile. "You didn't. I'm the one that should apologize. You've been so wonderful to me, and I keep pushing you away. I'm really sorry, Martin. I just don't know what I want anymore. I understand. I looked at him angrily. I didn't want to hurt him, and I couldn't begin to comprehend why he kept putting up with what could only be considered my bewildering behavior. He was a wonderful guy, and he deserved better. How would you like to go out dancing? Dancing? Sure. It would be a perfect end to a wonderful birthday. I shook my head. I don't think so. Are you sure? I'm sure. But thank you for asking. Maybe some other time. Maybe. Mercifully, Martin left soon after. I accepted his quick kiss and didn't even bother to shoot down Ellen's obvious delight when she saw the gesture. I was submerged in a tub of hot water when the thunder rolled in close. Outside, I could hear the wind pick up and see the white flashes of lightning. Soon, rain was pounding against the roof. On the landing, I called out, "I'll be right there." As I turned toward my bedroom to retrieve a robe, I changed my mind, though, when I realized the rain was coming down so hard. It was highly likely, unlikely, that Ellen had heard me. Securing my towel, I pounded down the stairs and pulled the front door open. My visitor wasn't Ellen, though. It was Steve. I gasped in surprise, stunned, speechless. I stood there. "Happy birthday, Chrissy," he said with a tired little smile. "Steve, what are you doing here? I didn't want you to spend your birthday alone. Besides, I wanted to see you," he said softly. "There's a beer in the refrigerator. Do you have a soda or tea? I'm not drinking alcohol anymore." I blinked in surprise. "Yes, of course, the kitchen is through there." I returned shortly clad in a pair of denim cutoffs and a red tank top. Steve didn't comment on how I looked. He was sitting on my sofa looking comfortable but tired. When I walked into the room, his eyes sought mine. The look I saw there reminded me of the old days. Suddenly, unexpectedly, I was overwhelmed with memories of something so good, so familiar, that I could hardly stand up. "I was afraid you'd be angry with me for coming, but I couldn't stand the thought of you spending your birthday alone here in a strange town. Are you upset with me?" I shook my head. "I'm not upset," I told him, and realized that I wasn't. "But you shouldn't have come all this way, Steve. I haven't been alone. There's a dear, sweet lady next door that I think the world of. She's taken me under her wing, and she wouldn't dream of letting me spend my birthday alone." Steve looked at me thoughtfully. "Good, I'm glad." We both fell silent. But even as I thought this, I couldn't help remembering some of the good times. "Christina, I need to talk to you, but first promise me you'll let me finish before you say anything." I looked at him warily. "There's nothing to say, Steve." "Maybe you don't have anything to say, but I do. Please, Christina, just let me say it." I sighed, but turned to meet his eyes. "All right, Steve." Instead of speaking, Steve stood and crossed the room to the window. Without looking at me, Steve began to speak. "I don't think you ever believed it, but the day Janelle died, you weren't the only one that wanted to die with her. I loved her too, Christina. I do realize that there's a special bond between mothers and their children, but every now and then, if a man is very lucky, he shares a special bond with his child too. And I had that with Jan. You know I did. It was true. I did know that. I'd forgotten for a time, I think. But what he said was true. It didn't completely absolve him, though. After she died, you just curled up inside your own pain and wouldn't let anyone near you. He turned and looked at me, then, the way he'd made everything sound like it was my fault, angered me, and I think he saw that on my face. Moving toward me, he sank down on the sofa again. I know you grieved in your own way, and I'm not blaming you for that, and I'm not trying to justify my affair. I cringed then, Steve's affair. That was something I would have never believed of him a few short years ago. Without my hesitation, Steve wrapped his arms around me. I felt right at home. Where was the anger? Where was the gut-wrenching fury? It wasn't there then, and I clung to Steve helplessly. I'm so sorry, Christina, he sobbed. I nodded against his shoulder, too choked up to speak. And I'm sorry about Kara. I stiffened. Kara. I'd never known her name, never wanted to, but I suddenly hated her with all my heart. I ended it a long time ago, before you even filed for a divorce. I love you, Christina. I always loved you, and I always will. Oh, Steve, I whispered, what happened to us? It's not too late. I pulled back. Those were the same emotions he always had wrapped around me. He was a good, decent man. I used to know that, but I was scared. Please, don't push me away, he begged. Steve stayed that night, and when I awoke the next morning, it seemed like the last months had fallen away. I was right where I should be, in bed beside my husband. By the time I was wide awake, reality returned, but I still couldn't find one single thing wrong about sleeping with Steve. Steve woke up as I laid there, looking at him. He looked almost surreal. The room was amber in the morning light. Good morning, Steve murmured. I smiled weakly. Good morning. The look in his eyes told me exactly what was on his mind. Would you care for some breakfast? Steve smiled. Maybe. What do you have in mind? Pulling my robe on, I ignored his proposition. Eggs, bacon, whatever. Steve's eyes lost their lust, and he smiled. All right. Eggs and bacon will be fine. Downstairs, he sat silent. When I sat his plate down in front of him, he grabbed me. Don't do this, Christina, he begged. What? Don't shut me out. Not now. Not after last night. Keeping my eyes averted from his, I sank down into the chair beside him. Maybe, just maybe, I owed him something. I can't do this, Steve. It's too soon. How could I have made love with him the night before if I really still hated him? Christina, but he didn't know what to say. The ball was in my court. Steve, there was a time when the only thing I felt for you was a deep, burning love that I thought would always be there. There was no one in the world that I thought more of than you. I'm not even the woman that divorced you. For the first time in my life, I'm on my own. I lost so much, and none of this has been easy, but I'm proud of myself. I'm proud of what I've accomplished. I think I like my independence, and I'm not ready to give it up. There were tears in Steve's eyes. I guess he knew it would have been pointless to argue. He just reached for me, and I effortlessly fell into his arms. I do love you, Christina. I know. I walked him to the door soon afterwards. Just remember that I still love you, Christina, he said. I leaned heavily against the door. And even knowing what I was feeling, I could scarcely believe what had transpired the day before. Steve, God, what had I been thinking? But I knew I was saying goodbye with all the anger and all the turmoil during our divorce proceedings. I'd never really had the opportunity to close that door. Now I had. Perhaps I hadn't chosen the wisest path, but I felt relatively calm about what had happened. Martin didn't even cross my mind until he called 2 days later. 6 weeks later, I visited my physician. "I have good news," Dr. Miller said. I looked at him stonily. I'd been sick for 2 weeks and was not in the mood for any of his medical humor. "What? You don't have the flu?" "No." "What then?" Dr. Miller chuckled. "No, ma'am, nothing like what you think. The only thing wrong with you will clear up of its own accord in about 34 weeks. My mouth dropped open. I'm pregnant? Dr. Miller smiled. "Yes, congratulations." I nodded numbly. It was much later before the reality of the situation boiled me over. My God, I was pregnant. The very idea of carrying a baby, giving birth, loving another child was more than I could bear. I couldn't wrap my heart around another child, knowing how high the risk was. But another part of me challenged that assertion. Could I honestly say I wouldn't have cherished those 6 years even more had I known? I didn't want to think about that. I couldn't have a baby. I just couldn't. I went to bed as soon as night seeped fretfully over town. When I did, I slept lightly and awoke sometime around midnight with a new and frightening thought. I didn't know who the father was. It could have been Martin. It might have been Steve. I honestly didn't know. I kept my secret to myself. I still saw Martin on occasion, and Steve called a few times, but neither knew about the other, and neither knew about the baby. It only took a couple of weeks for me to realize that there was no way I could terminate the pregnancy. Having made my decision, I once more asked my company for a transfer. They willingly agreed to find a position for me in Kentucky. And the hardest part was telling Ellen. Martin held me tightly when I told him goodbye, and that was kind of hard. I did care about him, and if I could have told him with absolute certainty that the baby I was carrying was his, maybe I would have told him, but I don't think I would have. I just wasn't ready. As for Steve, I didn't tell him anything. At this point, I just wasn't ready. I'd call him later when I was settled. Kentucky had its own charm, though it was much different than Louisiana. It seemed like very little time had passed when I found myself in labor. It felt strange getting through this alone. I realized, lying there in the room, just what a good husband Steve had been. He never left my side for a second during Janelle's birth. Jonathan was born at 6:15 in the morning on a glorious day in May. The minute they laid him in my arms, I knew Martin was his father. The baby looked just like him. The next day, standing outside the nursery window with the other parents, I couldn't help noticing the crowd of proud fathers. I had a lot to think about. I still hadn't made a decision 4 weeks later when the phone rang in the middle of the night. Jonathan had a terrible case of colic and neither of us had been getting much sleep. I reached for the phone. "Hello," I growled. "Christina, it's Martin." "Martin?" I asked. "What happened?" "Oh, Christina, there's no easy way to tell you this." "What? What is it?" "It's Mama." A sob caught in his throat. "She died a little while ago, Christina. Mama died." "No," I remember crying. "No, tell me it's not true. I'm so sorry, Christina." "I know you loved Mama. She loved you too." We talked for several more minutes. I knew it would be hard in more ways than one. Let me start over here. I promised him I'd be there for the funeral. Mama didn't know I had a child, or Martin didn't know. Martin looked shocked when he saw me walk into the funeral parlor with a baby in my arms. I was overcome with emotions as I stood there looking at Ellen. So much so that Martin eased Jonathan out of my arms. Later, when most of the family and friends had left, Martin cornered me. I was feeding Jonathan and crooning to him softly when I heard the door open. "I'm glad you could come." I nodded as I watched he kneeled down in front of me, gazing at Jonathan. "This is quite a surprise, Christina." "Yes," I said. "I know Mother didn't know. She would have told me." "No, she didn't know. You should have told her. She would have been so thrilled." It was at that moment that I decided to tell him. "She would have been even more thrilled to know that you had a baby. She would have treated him like her own grandchild. You were pregnant when you left town?" "Yes." Martin stood, and the look on his face was less friendly. "How could you do that, Christina? How could you go away and have a baby without telling me?" I shouldn't have been surprised by his anger. I told him that I couldn't help myself, that at that point there was still a part of me that loved Steve. "Does he know?" "No." With a high sigh, he stood up and walked toward the door. He turned and faced me, leaning heavily against the door. "I loved you, Christina. I think I fell in love with you the first evening in Mother's backyard. I knew you were going through a lot of pain. But I'm having a real hard time understanding how you could go away and have a child without my knowledge. If you didn't love me, if you didn't want to be part of my life, that was one thing, but you should have told me what was going on," he said. "What could I say?" Tears filled my eyes. "You're right. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. I love you, Christina, and I will love your child even if he's not mine. That doesn't matter to me." "What if it's Steve? Are you going to tell him?" "Look at that baby, Martin. Really look at Jonathan. Are you telling me that he doesn't look like you?" Then Martin looked at Jonathan and smiled. Emotions clutched at my heart. I loved him. I really did love him. I was crying when I stood and moved toward him. "I don't think I deserve your love, Martin, but I'm so grateful for it." He looked surprised and happy when I said, "I love you, Martin. I don't know why it took me so long to realize it, but I know I do." He pulled Jonathan and me into his arms. "Are you saying you'll marry me? Are you asking?" His eyes twinkled. "Yes, I am." It was almost a year before we actually married. I moved to the town where Martin lived and transferred back to my old office. I finally felt like my past was behind me. Through the pain of Janelle's death, would never completely go away, but I was ready to move forward and make a future for myself, and I knew Martin was meant to be a part of it. We took it slow, though he had as much access to Jonathan as he wanted. I still talked to Steve, and Martin understood that. He didn't know there'd been a period of time when I thought Jonathan might be his child, but he seemed happy for me and wished me the best, as I did him. The last time I spoke to him was the night before my wedding. I was about to become another man's wife, and though Steve would always dwell in my heart, in that special place where Janelle still lived, it didn't seem fair to Martin to remain in contact with my ex-husband. I made certain that Steve knew I'd be there if he ever needed me, but otherwise I had a new life, a new family, and I hoped he'd find as much happiness as I had. Despite everything, Steve deserved to be happy again. We both do. Okay, that's the end of that story, and that's going to do it for this romance program. This has been Volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sun Sounds. Have a great week. Take care. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.